Some internet wobbles when things get tough. Ours? Rock solid. Built for speed and reliability, and backed by real local experts right here in Australia.
Yep, the kind who actually fix things for you, not just read from a script. NBN plans begin at just $49.95 per month. T's and C's apply.
Visit leaptel.com.au and leap to better internet today.
You're listening to SBS News.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 20th of May 2026, a day where the Australian share market fell to a seven-week low. We'll have the details with Francesco Destrades from Ord Minnett in a moment. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We go into more detail on the top consumer finance and market news stories covered during On The Money on SBS World News. But first, tax experts say recent internet memes trolling the Prime Minister, which claim he'll own 47% of various small businesses, oversimplify the government's budget tax reform proposal. So to break it all down, I spoke with William Buck Tax Services partner, Todd Want. Todd, let's clear up.
There's been some interesting ones out there, that's for sure. But I think one of the parts that it has drawn out is that people are upset about the tax changes, that they might hit them. But what we need to do is take a step back, and there's two very different parts to proposed tax changes in the way things are taxed. One is the tax on earnings along the way, so your profits each year, and one is the capital gains tax, so if you were to sell the business or the asset at the end of the day. The one that I think the 47% is really targeting or people's views on that is that some of their capital gains that may have previously been taxed more favourably. So a lot of them may have been at, say, 23.5%, may now be 47% in the future. So an increase in that tax rate on a sale of a business at the end. The day-to-day profits is a little bit different insofar as the trust, proposed trust taxation measures might hit those. But otherwise, individuals' marginal tax rates weren't increased in this budget. So the earnings that they get into their own hands and taxed in your own name from your day-to-day profits or earnings, those weren't changed as
to that current system.
So what tends to happen with capital gains tax is that we've got a system here in Australia under the existing laws where if you meet certain criteria, not all of the gain is taxable. So what's referred to as the discount capital gain or the 50% CGT discount. So what that means is that an individual or a trust that makes a capital gain, and let's say it sells an asset and for $100 more than what it had bought it for. So you've made a capital gain of $100. The CGT discount says that, okay, 50% of that gain is taxable. So instead of the whole $100, only $50 of it is taxable. That goes into the individual's tax return. They pay tax on it. And if they were on the top marginal tax rate of 47%, 47% of $50 is $23.50. So the real tax rate that they may have historically been used to paying on a $100 gain is 23.5%. Under these changes that have been proposed, the discount is to be abolished from 1 July 2027. So apart from a transitional period where if you bought an asset before 1 July 27 but sold it afterwards, where you might be in two different systems, the discount is gone on future or proposed to be gone on future gains. So hence why people are saying, well, hang on, we might end up paying a lot more capital gains tax than what we used to under the existing system.
Yeah, so when we look at it from a business perspective, right, especially small businesses raise cash and get the business to grow.
Yeah, so businesses, there are some existing measures for small businesses that give them some additional capital gains discounts and concessions. So those haven't been changed or touched in the current budget proposals. So they are still available to small businesses. So many small businesses may be able to apply further reductions to their capital gains and reduce their tax bill. But only certain small businesses qualify for that. So if you're not meeting that criteria or you're a larger business or you're selling an asset that perhaps isn't one of the business assets, you will end up in a system where it's quite different. You're not getting the discount, so you may end up paying a lot more tax there because of those changes, because you're not getting a discount. So there's a gateway to get through them. So you have to be a small business. So either the value of your business assets and your related party assets, excluding your super and family home, are under $6 million, or your business turns over under $2 million. So there's one of, you only need to meet one of those two tests, and you're small by definition. Then the asset you're selling has to be a business asset, like goodwill in the business that you're selling. You can't, it's not on your plant and equipment, but things like goodwill. Then if you meet those sort of base criteria, then there's either some further reductions, so another 50% reduction on the gain that's taxable. So you know, your $100 gain under the current system is already reduced to 50, it could be reduced to $25. And then there's a piece within the, these concessions where you also might be able to put some extra money into super, which can reduce your tax bill. So it's basically one of the key things with these measures when they were brought in was to say a lot of small business people during the running of their business don't have extra money left over to put into super. Very different to a PAYG wage earner who has their now 12% of their salary going into super. A lot of small business people aren't putting in the chunks. So their super, in one way or another, is actually the sale of their business, is their bit of a, you know, thing they're putting away for retirement. So this is sort of designed to acknowledge that, to say, hey, you may have had to scrap along the way to really get there, and you may have not been able to offer yourself, you know, mum and dad running this business, not offer themselves the same treatment that they've been giving their employees that they're required to under law, but also putting away money for super for their employees and so on. They may not have been doing the same for themselves. So, so they can get some concessions for putting the money into super there. So it's basically further reducing the capital gain that's taxable, but also potentially with an advantage they can put a little bit more into super as well. So it's a measure that's, you know, in our experience, is really important to a lot of those very much mum and dad type businesses. And it's a really important concession, but it's one that people need to plan for because there are some little intricacies to it that can trip people up.
I think we're still in the early stages, right? We've just seen the federal budget, but do you see carve-ups being part of the final deal, especially for startups?
Look, it's an interesting one that as a country here, the discount is so ingrained in the thinking of people with when they make a capital gain. That and one of the real advantages to it is the simplicity of it, that an individual who has sold an asset only pays tax on half the gain. The proposed system of an indexation where you are saying, well, okay, over time, inflation means that the, something that cost a dollar today will be maybe a dollar five next year or the year after or a dollar 10 the year after or something like that. So the cost of things goes up. So you shouldn't be taxed on the gain that is just because of inflation. You should only be taxed if you've made a gain above that amount. This system may work well for assets that don't go up in price a lot. So if you've bought a business and it hasn't increased a lot from when to when you sell it, maybe you don't have much of a capital gain and maybe the changes don't impact you near as much. But if you're a startup or you're a business that is looking to sell off some stakes in it and so on, you may not have paid anything to set up that business. You set it up from scratch. You had the idea and so you didn't pay anything to buy it. The indexation method that has been proposed for capital gains adjusts the cost you paid to buy it. If you paid nothing to buy the business in the first place, even if inflation over the period you owned the business was 50%, a 50% increase on nothing is still nothing. So this is where the issue kicks in, that under the existing system, as I mentioned earlier, if you made a capital gain of $100, the 50% discount means you're only taxed on 50. Under this indexation method, it says, well, we can adjust your cost base. But if your cost base is zero, your $100 gain ends up entirely taxed. You're not actually getting any reduction or increase in the cost base to reduce your gain, because you work out your gain from, broadly speaking, your sale price minus what it cost you to buy the asset or build the asset there. So there's some real issues here for those who haven't paid much to buy the assets or have, you know, effectively started up themselves. Do I think that will lead to some potential carve-outs? It's one where we need to be ensuring that the future generations and the aspirational young people or others who want to start a business, who want to take the risks, who want to try things, that balance between them getting rewarded for potentially scrapping for a number of years, living life on the smell of an oily rag, so to speak, and with the potential that if the idea works or the business works, they might get rewarded financially well at the end. But if there is too much of a tax burden, the incentive to do that may well be reduced or take that risk. So we're a country where there's a lot of very good entrepreneurial people, and we want to encourage that.
That's William Buck's tax services partner, Todd Want. We also spoke about the implication for the intergenerational transfer of wealth and the tax implications there. Didn't want to overload you with too much tax talk, so hopefully we'll get to that in a later podcast later this week. But for now, let's go to the Australian share market, which fell to a seven-week low, the ASX 200 down 1.3%. Those weaker precious metal prices weighing on mining stocks today. The big banks down. Webjet dived 11%. Virgin told the travel agent it's reducing its commercial arrangements. And James Hardie fell. The full-year net profit at the building services provider a plummeting 75%. It told investors it's already passing on price rises to customers as output cost rates, as expectations rise. Run us through what's happening here, how the bond market is responding and the implications of that.
Yeah, well, we've seen 10-year bond yields rise to about 4.5%. So they've risen quite dramatically. And the reason for that is there's been persistent inflation. I mean, we all thought inflation was coming under control, but it's been relatively persistent. And then you throw on top of that the conflict in the Middle East and oil prices rising. That obviously adds to the inflation, not just at the Bowser, but also, transport costs increase, which means your end products increase. So that's adding to inflation pressure. And then you've got increased government spending, which means increased government borrowing, which means competition for those funds out there. So that's reasons why we're seeing the long-term bond yields rise. How does that impact upon equities? Well, look, on a valuation basis, then the risk-free rate increases, and ultimately that puts a bit of downward pressure on valuations, competition for capital increases, and obviously higher funding costs at the company level. Look, I don't think it's a fundamental change in the valuation of our companies. I think it's just more of a risk-reward movement with asset price shifting and interest rates rising. We'll probably see a shift of capital from one asset class to another.
So when you look at the share market today, how's all of that flowing through to it, and where are we seeing the action and why?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of reasons. Obviously, we follow the leader, as we always have done, sometimes blindly, but the US market was down overnight. The share market's been up and down like a yo-yo since the start of this conflict in Iran. And I think it'll continue along that path until we see an end in sight. Now, how long is a bit of string? Some people say this conflict will go on for quite some time. I suspect that the administration in the US doesn't want it to go on for too long, because we've got midterm elections coming up September and a few other things on the horizon. So I think they want to end this pretty quickly, which would mean it'll take a bit of pressure off inflation, which means it might take a bit of pressure off those long-term bond yields. But in that sense, here we're seeing a lot of downward pressure on interest rate sensitive sectors like the REITs and infrastructure, obviously selected infrastructure in some areas. Growth sectors are weaker. The tech space is always under pressure whenever interest rates rise. And resources are a bit mixed. Banks, there's a bit of pressure there with the banks and their valuations. But look, overall, I think it's more of a deterioration, not a deterioration in underlying fundamentals of earnings. It's more of an asset shift.
What about the mood for the banks? Has that shifted? We've got further potential local interest rate rises, budget changes to property-related tax concessions, and the potential direct and indirect effects of the war in the Middle East.
Yeah. Look, the banks, you know, the banks have been overvalued, particularly here in Australia, have been expensive, if not overvalued, for quite some time. And I think you'll find that, you know, there's a few things tugging at it upwards and downwards. If you look at higher interest rates, which are good for banks, net interest margins start to expand, so that's good for their bottom line. You know, their balance sheets are still very strong. I mean, we have very high levels of corporate capital adequacy ratios here in Australia, so wouldn't expect those to deteriorate too much. But, you know, there's still a few headwinds in front of them. Higher interest rates means, you know, pressure on mortgages, which means, you know, potential for higher delinquencies and increased provisions for bad and doubtful debts. So that puts a bit of downward pressure on their earnings. Credit growth slows when interest rates rise. So that puts a bit of downward pressure. Then we've got, you know, changes to the housing policy, particularly here in Australia with the likes of the change in the budget and investment in housing. That might take a bit of pressure off mortgage growth as well. So there's a few things tugging at it on a downward side as well. And I think, you know, our banks are fully priced. I don't expect to see much growth out of them in the near term. If anything, you know, if we see, you know, an end to this conflict and a bit of downward pressure on oil prices, which will take a bit of pressure off inflation, which might see interest rates come down or take pressure off upward pressure, we might see the banks revalued downwards. At Ords, we've thought the banks are expensive for quite some time. We saw a trigger the other day which saw CBA come off quite considerably. That might happen again in the future as well. So whilst I'm not recommending people sell their banks outright, I do recommend people reduce their exposure at this point in time.
And very briefly, what are you telling your clients right now and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Well, I'm telling them obviously not to panic. We at Ord Minnett look at investing for the long term. So we don't see this volatility in the markets, if you like, as being a change in the fundamentals of the companies that we like. It's more of a change of asset pricing. So we'd expect more volatility, particularly as this conflict continues in Iran. Oil prices will go up and down, which mean energy stocks, which we have a few of here in Australia, will move around as that oil price goes up and down. And then obviously stocks that are impacted by oil prices, particularly the growth end of the sector, will be impacted. We like quality infrastructure stocks, so stocks that don't have huge levels of gearing, their revenues linked to inflation, you know, they've got strong pricing power. The likes of Transurban with, you know, toll roads is, I think, a good investment for Australian investors, particularly on the income front. The budget the other day obviously pushed a lot more people, investors, to focus on income, and I think that's a key. Our big resources stocks, I think, are fine. It's the smaller ones you've got to be careful of. I still think copper is a good theme over the next 2 to 3 years, and that's been reinforced by a number of houses out there in the investment community. Obviously, with investors balancing a bit of your assets across to fixed income as rates are becoming higher is advisable as well. But, you know, we're cautious, but we're not overly nervous about the market. I think, you know, whilst it looks overvalued, it could get to a point where it looks relatively fair value, if not cheap, if we start to see earnings growth kick in. And I think the potential for that is quite high. We saw a good earnings reporting season in the US recently. And if we start to see an end to this conflict, I think we might see the same here in Australia.
SBS World News, the weekday edition at 6:30 on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday, and I'll catch you then.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decisions.
Noor Haider here, one of the hosts of The Guardian's daily news podcast, Full Story. Every weekday, we go beyond the headlines, taking you closer to The Guardian's journalism. Listen to Full Story wherever you get your podcasts.